extract from a novel I'm writing about teenagers in Dublin in the late 1970s. Excuse me, my voice. It's a small fragment, and I'm trying to inhabit, you know, that weird twilight zone of misery and excitement, the sort of cynicism and naivety that teenagers have. And I think a lot of people still have that, you know, vestiges of that, myself included. So in this extract, God, my voice is funny, isn't it?
That's really, yeah. Sounds like really high, like.
I sound like a castrato. My two protagonists are sitting on the rocks, drinking, smoking, and waxing lyrical, even philosophical, about life and the universe and everything else. Millie and me have a rule. We're never going to get sucked in by the crap. The only way to stay safe is to hate the world and everyone in it. Because, like it or not, the world is full of shit. This one night, we're sitting out there on the rocks, listening to Millie's Walkman and watching the waves come crashing in. We're shivering in the wind, with nothing but a shared cigarette, Randy Crawford's smooth, velvety voice, and an earplug each to keep us warm. One day I'll fly away, leave your love to yesterday. I'll never turn me back on you, no matter what, says Millie. Me neither. The world is full of shit. Yeah, it is. People are scum, totally. Life's a bitch and then you die. The Walkman's battery runs out, but I have a surprise for Millie. A fresh pack of Marlboro, clean out of O'Grady's cabinet, with the cellophane wrapping still on. Millie's face lights up and she rips open the pack. When she peels away the silver paper, the raw, sweet scent of tobacco mingles with the salt sea air. This is the life, watching the waves beating against the shoreline, our eyes stinging and our ears red, raw and burning with cold. This is magic, staring over at the Howth Peninsula, all lit up and twinkling, fairy lights, a beacon against the pitch black night. This is pure bliss. Sitting in the inky darkness, no moon in sight, and the sky a black void. And it's how we like it, all that mystery. Millie lights a match. A sudden gust of wind blows the flame asunder. She lights another, and another one after that. Here, let me. I cup the flame in my hands. The cigarette tip glows. Millie does the same for me, and together we watch the ribbons of smoke curling up into the night. What's the worst thing that ever happened to you? Millie asks. She's always asking questions like that. Being born, I suppose. Millie laughs. She flicks some ash. It's like this, right? You're born, you're a girl, and then life goes downhill from there. Yeah. It's the worst thing that can happen in this dump. Millie lets on to be shocked. Bridge, this is the Emerald Isle, the land of saints and scholars. I make a smoke ring and puff it out. Yeah, island of green puke. We crack up. Nuns, priests and religion, Millie. Fuck that, sex, drugs and rock and roll. Millie, close your eyes. She closes her eyes. I dig in and pull a half bottle of whiskey out of my coat. I think of Mr. O'Grady. He was watching me, going out the door, one eye full of suspicion, the other full of dirt. For a minute there, I thought he had me. My heart was thumping, but he was just perving at me through the glass. I unscrew the lid. and the smell of the whiskey floats up into my nostrils. Ace. Okay, open. Millie opens her eyelids. I hand her the bottle and she coughs straight away. Careful, Millie, it's powerful stuff. She takes a sniff, knocks it back, and passes the bottle to me. I do the same. Millie burps. I burp. The sea burps. I prefer brandy, Millie says. She always says that. I explain to Millie that brandy is harder to get at. I tell her it's locked in a cage behind a counter, closeted away with the stuff they get from America. What stuff? Tequila, Millie, tequila. Liquid gold. The stuff that rock stars drink. Bridge, I do happen to know what tequila is. I have drunk it before. She's lying. I can't help thinking about O'Grady. His hand brushed mine deliberately when I paid for the chewing gum. Red hairs standing up like spiders on the white blotchy skin. When I mention it to Millie, she laughs sarcastically. No wonder, with the battle axe he's married to. I think about her too. Out in the back doing the accounts. Aaron Cardigan, grim face, glasses, and him with his spidery hands, Mr. and Mrs. I unscrew the lid and tip the bottle back again. Sweet molten lava slides down my windpipe. The lights of the peninsula sparkle more brightly than ever, and I catch sight of a boat creeping along the horizon like a gnat. The sail is a pale grey ghost, a faint blur of Jesus walking upon the waves. Millie and me are silent for a while, looking out over the rocks. I wonder what it's like to be a wave, says Millie. You're here 1 second, and you're gone the next. She always comes out with stuff like that. It's a short life, shorter than a flea even. Listen, Millie, we're getting out of here, right? I told her. Where to? America. That's where we'll go. We can apply for a green card when we're 18. What? Can we? The Big Apple? Yeah, Manhattan. Just like our ancestors. You don't know how lucky they were, Millie says. All them people who left in the famine. Yeah, I know. Bastards. Behind us, cars swished up and down along the coast road, the sound of their tires merging with the sound of the ocean, everything rushing back and forth. I thought about all those strangers, people we'd never know, hands on wheels, going somewhere. An icy wind whips up and we huddle together for warmth, Millie plucking at the sleeve of my fat corduroy coat, two sizes too big. I haven't seen you wearing this before. Is it new or what? No, it's my brother's. He's probably tearing his hair out as we speak. We giggle as we picture my brother searching high and low for his good corduroy. I only took it because I don't have a coat, just a jacket. But apart from that, the lining is very handy in putting stuff in. You know what, says Millie, her eyes wide open, looking straight at me. If it weren't for you, I'd probably have to slash my wrist with broken glass. It's one of the nicest things she's ever said. And it reminds me of what good friends we are. Millie and me have a pact. We're like Bonnie and Clyde, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. We hate life. We hate people. We hate cats and dogs even. The only thing we care about is each other and the sea, the scent of the ocean and freedom. I said to Millie one day, Millie, to do anything in this world, you need dosh. She said, Bridge, I'm not being funny, but everyone knows that. Well, let's get a job and save up for our ticket to America. Okay, Millie said. We start checking the ads. A few days later, Millie rang me at home. Listen, I saw an ad in the Evening Herald. Sands Hotel is looking for staff. I know a girl from Grey Rats who got a job there, and she's a moron. Just like the rest of that school. So if she can get a job there, so can anyone. Let's give it a go, I told her. On the night in question, we whiz off to the bus stop, all dolled up to the nines. Buses go past, one after the next, chocker block. So we stick our thumbs out and hitch for a lift. A white Morris Minor pulls up to the curb and we clamber in. Nightmare. There's a fat, spiteful looking, green-eyed cat squatting in the back and a creepy old biddy up front. The car's minging. "You girls are playing God with your safety," she tells us. "Aren't she lucky now I stopped?" Millie and me keep shtum, but she keeps bugging us with stupid questions. It's like Gestapo. "How old are ye?" Millie and me always lie about our age. "What school do you go to?" We lie about that too. At long last, she drops us off, not too far from the hotel. Millie and me can't wait to get out. A whole 15 minutes swimming in cat pee. Soon as she's gone, we sniff each other's clothes and hair, but there's no palm, thank God. We're at Port Marnock and the big hotel is there to our left, facing the bone-white sands of the beach. It's huge, flashy neon, big palm trees, car park, and even the bus stop has been renamed Sands Hotel. Millie is shitting herself already. "What does the advert say again?" I search in my bag for the newspaper clipping that she showed me earlier. It says, "Lounge staff required, male and female, inquire at desk, ask for Mr. Feely." That's it. Nothing about age or experience. Nothing at all. "Millie, what are you worrying about?" We look up at the hotel again. "Let's go home," Millie says. "We're underage and we haven't even made an appointment. They'll never give us a job in here. We're wasting our time." That pisses me off. "No, we're not backing out." I grab Millie's arm. "Come on." We stroll up through the car park, me leading the way, Millie humming and hawing behind. "I wonder what that Feely fella's like," she says. That triggers us off. "Good evening, Mr. Feely. How are you feeling? Have you seen Mr. Touchy? Oh, give us a feel, Mr. Feely. Where's your feelers?" By the time we reach the outside of the hotel, all the tension is gone and we're much braver. "Come on, sister," says Millie. "Let's do it. Walk in as if we absolutely own the place." We saunter in through the entrance, all tinted glass and burnished chrome. There's an enormous placard advertising tonight's band, Café Crème, appearing in the lounge at 7. "Crappy Crème," says Millie. "Shit band." "Yeah, totally shit." Inside the lobby, we're treated to a tinkly medley of Simon and Garfunkel. But other than that, the place is dead. It reminds me of a chapel or a library, but very luxuriant. Big ferns, leather sofas, glass pillars, all that. The carpet muffles our feet as we glide along the passage. And halfway down, we see an official-looking type in a tan-coloured suit, sprawled out on one of the red leather armchairs, smoking a cigar. His coat is folded neatly on the chair next to him, and his black hat is perched on top of that. He raises his glass in a sly salute. We ignore him and walk on, but Millie starts cracking up as usual. "He might be a bar inspector," she hisses. "So what? We haven't done anything." Behind me, I can hear the sound of ice clinking in his glass. And on a mirror in front, I can still see him watching with his ice drink and cigar. We walk up to the desk. The receptionist is on the phone. She nudges her colleague, a tall, stringy man in a black morning suit. "He reminds me of someone, but I can't think." Then it comes to me in a disturbing flash. It was Sister Agnes's speciality. Rare footage of the Holocaust, people in rags marching in the snow. "To think, girls, if these unfortunates had only been Catholics, they would have been spared." One of the victims stared into the camera with hollow, death-filled eyes. The The man behind the desk has the same look. What can I do for you, ladies? His eyes travel slowly from Millie to me and back again. I nudge Millie. She hitches her net bag further up her shoulder, but it slides down again. We have an interview. He stares at our denim jackets. Oh, yes. With whom? Mr. Feely, says Millie, really getting into her stride. The undertaker lifts the tannoy to make an announcement. Mr. Feely to reception. Reception, please, Mr. Feely. His voice bounces off the walls and back again like a siren. When he switches off the microphone, more sugary music trickles into the lobby. This time, it's Knights in White Satin, the blue rinse version. Wait over there, please, ladies, the undertaker says. He waves us off to the side like a pair of irritating mosquitoes. But Millie and me stay put. We didn't come all this way to be treated like nothing. The blonde receptionist shoots daggers at us from the phone. We shoot back, but she carries on with her phone call. As I was saying, Bernie. Not very professional, says Millie, loud enough to be heard over the tinkling piano. Fancy talking on the phone when his customer's waiting at the desk. Yeah, makes you wonder how she got the job, I add. Without warning, my eyes begin to itch, and then a vicious sneeze takes me by surprise. What's wrong? Millie asks. You're starting to look like E.T. It's my allergies. What perfume is that cow wearing? Is it musk? I'm seriously allergic to musk. Millie sniffs the air like a connoisseur. No, it's not musk. But it might be Charlie. My sister got a bottle off her boyfriend for Valentine. She keeps it for going out on a Friday. It's not cheap. She sniffs again. It might even be cachet. It's kind of the same smell. That costs an arm and a leg. There must be our good wages in here. I doubt it, I say. She probably has a sugar daddy. The receptionist throws us a dirty look and her voice drops down low. She's talking about us, Millie says. I slink closer to the desk, doing my best to earwig the conversation. But Barbie moves over the phone, dragging the long cord behind and forcing Dr. Death to hop out of her way. I saunter back over to Millie. Did you see that? Nearly strangling the poor man. She's such a spa. Poison, Millie says. Yeah, that too. But that's more for prozzies. What is? A perfume. What's it called? I told you, poison. Good name for this place. I look around me at the lobby again. The stranger of earlier is gone. His coat and hat are gone too. I feel an odd sense of loss. Then the door to the lounge bursts open and a small, bald, cranky-looking man in a pinstripe pulls towards the desk. Don't look now, says Millie. I bet that's Feely. That's it. Thank you.